Hello and welcome to Root Causes, the PKI and Security Podcast, where two industry veterans talk about all things PKI, including cryptography, certificates, revocation, trust models, and things along those lines. I am Tim Callen, Senior Fellow at Sigtigo, and I am joined by Jason Sirocco, CTO of IoT at Sigtigo. How are you doing today, Jay?
Doing great, Tim. Thank you.
This is our episode 27, and I read an article very recently, and I'm the one who suggested this after I read this article. Germany, this was published in ZDNet on July 1st is where I got it. So props to ZDNet. But Germany has published a draft of its quote-unquote secure browser requirements. So Germany had a 2017 guideline that is currently in effect for basically what is considered to be an acceptable secure browser. And that guideline has an updated draft from 2019, and it covers a lot of stuff that is not really certificate related, but it has some certificate related stuff. So I thought maybe we'd just go down and explain what they are.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. This is an interesting article from July 1st. For those of you who in Canada might have been on holidays that day, or Americans who might have been on holiday that week, right. This came up during a quiet week, and it's worth bringing up right now.
Sure. So here's some of the requirements. I'm just going to try to stick with stuff that has to do with certificates. So must support TLS. I don't think that's new. I think that's pretty important. Must have a list of trusted certificates. I think they mean trusted certificate roots. So once again, not used, new. Now this third one is new. Must support extended validation certificates. So EVSSL support is a requirement, and I actually looked up that requirement in the original document. My German's a little rusty, but that's essentially what it says. It's in German, but it says must support extended validation SSL is essentially what it said. Certificates must be checked against a CRL or OCSP, which again, I don't think is new, but I think that's important. Here's an interesting one. The browser must use icons or color highlights to show when communications to a remote server are encrypted or in plain text. So basically, there's got to be a visual indicator that you can see as the user to know whether or not this is encrypted communication. That's what the lock icon used to be. Connections to remote websites running on expired certificates must be allowed only after specific user approval. And then there are a few things that get a little more weedsy. Must support HSTS, must support same origin policy, must support content security policy, and then it gets into a bunch of stuff that isn't really certificate related.
Yeah, there is some cool stuff in there, such as sandboxing, et cetera. They don't get into enormous amounts of detail, but it is part of the spec.
Right. So what do you think? Do you agree with those requirements?
Yes, I think I do. And in fact, seeing that the support of extended validation certificates listed as number 3 is obviously close to my heart and probably yours too, oh, yeah. Tim. And the fact that the browser, they are absolutely stating explicitly that the user experience of SSL needs to be part of what a secure browser is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the real interesting things about it, right? It's not just backend stuff. We're not talking about OCSP and HSTS, right? We're also talking about the interface. So there's a sense among the people who are creating this regulation that social engineering attacks are incredibly important, and that a browser can and must defend to the degree that it's able against social engineering attacks.
Social engineering attacks, that might include links to sites of major websites that you know and love that probably do have an extended validation certificate and have for years, that visual indicator that allows you to know just sort of at a glance that you are at a site that you trust. That's an important part of the browser experience, because it obviously it's a human-based user interface. Yeah. It's not just a machine-to-machine interface.
Yeah,
it needs to interact with a human being, and therefore it requires something, an icon, a color, something to show you, hey, this is a trusted site.
So I don't think they use the word phishing ever in the paper. I didn't spot it, but this is really what it's about, right? They're saying that browsers need to do what they can to defend against phishing and its ilk. And, you know, it's interesting. Phishing is a practice that goes back to the 1990s. It is such an old attack, and yet it's still very prevalent. It's still effective. It still is a cornerstone of online criminal activity. And I ask myself, how is this possible? And part of the reason is I don't think that browser interfaces have worked hard enough or effectively enough to solve that problem.
The browser itself is the mechanism with which the human being is browsing off to either the legitimate site or the not legitimate site. It's not like there aren't any mechanisms at all available to them to be able to tell whether or not you're on your banking site or on your whatever site you might be making payments to, or something that's differing from very quickly created phishing site that is meant to emulate it. Those kinds of things to very quickly visually tell you the difference between the two can be incredibly effective.
You know, one of the objections that is raised is people say, well, you know, if you take away an EV indicator, right? If you take away the company branded green address bar, people will often go and interact with the site anyway. And yeah, I get that. However, why is that? Part of that is because they get an inconsistent experience across different browsers. Part of that is because the browsers have made those indicators small and weak and obscure. And, you know, it's like they want to make the indicators as poor as they can and still be able to check the mark to say that they have the indicator. And some of it is because of those things, companies haven't been able to get behind it with real bold messages. Like, if you don't see my company name at the top of your browser, stop interacting with that website. And, you know, I remember back in the late 2000s when we introduced DV, we talked to large companies that were big phishing targets, and that's exactly what they did. They were marketing to their consumers at the time, and they were saying, if you don't see my name at the top, if you're in this browser and you don't see my name at the top, you're not at the right place. Because back then they could do it. It was big and bold. And as the browsers watered down their ability or their willingness to say, this is the company that you're talking to, then the consequence of that was that the companies had to back off of those messages. And that's what got us to the situation we're in now.
The consistency of the user interface amongst all the different browsers is so incredibly important. You know, the browser you might be forced to work with at work, the one you work with at home, the one you work with on your mobile device, the one where you work with on your laptop, all might have different experiences. And in fact, I think this is a topic you and I have talked about, Tim. Mm-hmm. Even mobile applications themselves that you might be, you know, clicking on links, working through the internet, buying something, making payments, whatever it is you're doing, that might not even just be a traditional browser. It might be a browser embedded within another application.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is an area where the browsers have really underperformed, and we're seeing the results of that.
One of the techniques that I've heard proposed to help to protect people is about flagging sites that are considered phishing sites, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, that's an incredibly bold adventure, I would say.
Right.
So if you think about the antivirus industry over the past number of years, and they still exist and they still have their purpose.
Yep.
But let's be honest, right? Blacklisting of bad things in the most generic terminology possible is incredibly difficult. And that's, you know, back when there was just a handful of viruses or variants, that might have been viable. But when malware became just thousands and thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions to just unthinkable numbers of variations, where it really became every single attack was unique based on just the way the nature of the attack was, antivirus really started to have a hard time.
Yeah.
And so the analogy of this really, really kind of plays well also into phishing websites, which is the bad guys have figured out ways to create thousands, on the order of tens of thousands, of phishing websites in very short order.
Yeah.
And therefore, a phishing website, you know, its length of its length of existence as an operational thing for the bad guy might be very, very short.
Right.
Which is sufficient for the purpose. Exactly. A day, an hour. Yeah. It's incredible, some of the statistics that I've heard. So therefore, if you as a browser are trying to tell me that you're going to protect me by blacklisting this, I've been in the industry long enough, Tim, and you have as well. Yeah. I'm going to laugh at you because I know you're going to fail.
Well, and I think a layered security approach to here is fine, which, as I said, which is to say, yes, by all means, blacklist the known bad offenders. And while you're at it, run antivirus that's going to knock out the stuff that's going to be bad.
Sure.
Because that stuff is still out there.
Of course.
And if you don't knock it out, it's going to still come hurt you. It's just not sufficient. We need more than that.
So therefore, a green listing, right? I'll actually take that back, Tim. It's a white listing of websites through basically validating not just the ownership of a domain, but the real actual commercial ownership of a website, which is part of what the CAB Forum extended validation protocol really is all about. We've seen in cases, I'm not even going to use plural, we've seen examples of where it perhaps is technically possible to have a site of the same name created under, and have it issued an extended validation certificate. But if you take a look at the reality of it, that exact concept of thousands of phishing sites created, this is not what's going to be possible for extended validation certificates. You're just not going to be able to have tens of thousands of EV certificates issued within a day for a phishing campaign. It's just not the way it's going to work.
It's not your script kiddie style attack. It's not your automated style attack. Absolutely correct. So you and I used the example of passports in an earlier podcast. I forget what we were discussing, but the analogy that you said, Jay, was you said, well, okay, Jason Bourne might have a shoebox under the floorboards with 10 different passports in it, but that doesn't mean that your average small-time criminal has a false passport. And I think that's exactly right. It might be that someone somewhere can come up with a trick to basically make it look like they have the same name as someone they're trying to attack, but that is light years away from the kind of widespread, trivially easy website counterfeiting that we see today.
Yeah, Tim, for over the years, one of the things that I've learned is learn from what the bad guys are teaching us rather than just guessing at what a solution could be for some kind of nefarious action. And if one of the modern activities of phishing is to mass create websites, then a way to solve that is to whitelist websites on a very costly basis. And that by costly, I mean cost in terms of time, mm-hmm. which is paramount for this kind of attack. It actually makes the tens of thousands of phishing domains, especially off of a subdomain, untenable for a bad guy. And so therefore, it's an incredibly effective solution. And all we're saying here on this podcast is take a look at the German specification for what makes a safe browser. They're actually agreeing with us where support of extended validation certificates, as well as human user interface indications such as icons and colors, can be very important for the user.
So what do we imagine the consequences of this? So the German safe browsing specification comes out. And it's got these updates. Do we think this is going to matter?
I think it definitely is going to matter because a lot of things that happen in Germany affect a lot of the EU.
Sure.
If you're doing business with German governments, and that could include everything from, goodness, take a look at all the things in Germany that are centralized, from their pharmacy system up to all kinds of things that are centralized. You know, anytime you hear the word Bundes anything, we might call this the Bundes browser, right?
There you go. And the other thing is Germany, in terms of individual privacy, is really the leader in the world. And so a lot of people view, if you're a European multinational and you want to make sure you're not running afoul of regulations, you usually say, well, can I pass Germany, right? If I can pass Germany, there's a good chance I can pass everybody. And so Germany therefore becomes the same way that you and I talked about how in the energy world, Texas is just considered to be a leader and people take their pace from it. Similar thing happens in Germany with regard to individual privacy. And so in that regard, it's very likely to have effect on corporations throughout Europe who just say, I don't want someday to learn that I'm in trouble in Germany through no knowledge of my own. So I'm going to make sure that my people are using browsers that are compliant.
Yeah, I think this came out of what in English we would call the BSI. And I won't, you know, say that out what the words are in German, because I'll probably butcher it. But if you were to draw a map of all the initiatives that came out of BSI that are now part of European Union standard practices, it actually is quite high. And that goes to your point, Tim, of the fact that Germany's a leader, especially when it comes in terms of security and privacy.
Yeah, so right. So if you're working with the German government, if you're in the German government, or if you're just a large multinational corporate and you don't know exactly what any of your people might be doing at any given time, it's easy to imagine all of those groups following these standards and saying that they're only going to use browsers that are compliant with that.
Right on. Yep.
All right. Well, as always, we'll see how this develops. And this has been an interesting discussion. So I thank you very much, Jason. And this has been Root Causes.
Thank you so much, Tim. Take care.